Hello everyone, hello football fans around the world. Welcome to the Squawker Talker. My name is Nick English, and this week we're doing a little preview for the Premier League action at the weekend. I'm joined here by Squawker features editor Greg Johnson. Hello, Greg.
Hi, Nick. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Thanks. I'm good. Well, I was better until Liverpool knocked us out of the Europa League. But here we are. Here we are. Onwards and upwards.
Not great. We'll get into that. I'm also joined by Chief Content Officer Amar Singh. Thanks very much for joining us, Amar.
Hello, Nick.
How's it going?
Very well, thank you.
Excellent, fantastic. Okay, let's get straight into it. The first thing probably to talk about is the Manchester Derby, which is the biggest game this weekend. A lot of Derby action this weekend. And let's talk about United first. They sort of petered out of the Europa League yesterday with a not very good performance against Liverpool side, which looked totally in control. Despite the fact they were chasing the game for pretty much 90 minutes, they only managed 3 shots on target. A lot of people now saying this is the worst United squad in Premier League history, and this is actually worse than Moyes. Greg, what's your take on that?
Nah, it's not though, is it?
Because
no. I think you know, David Moyes was failing with the tail end of Ferguson's team. Van Gaal's tried to kind of take the club forward. He's failed. He's failed to do that. But United are at least trying to play a bit more of a rationalised form of football than let's just play 4-4-2 and do all the old tricks and see if it still sticks. So I think the problem United had is that there are always going to be big problems after Fergie because there are structural issues with how the club's run. And Moyes was just the worst appointment possible. It lacked ambition, he lacked experience, and it just took the club down at a rate of knots that I don't think many people are expecting. I mean, if you want to look at an example of, because many people say, let's say, when Arsene Wenger goes, the same thing's going to happen at Arsenal. That's not always the case. If your club is set up properly, like look at Dortmund this summer. Thomas Tuchel came in to replace Klopp, who'd been there for many years, built the club in its current image. And because he had the right director of football, the right guys in the background, it's pretty much seamless. They've gone back to where they were. And I think people were expecting Van Gaal to basically be our Thomas Tuchel last season in the Europa League. Taking us through into Europe. In the same way that Dortmund have gone back up to top, even though they're in Europa League, but it just hasn't really worked.
If there is a new manager coming in at the end of the season, Amar, which is what a lot of people are predicting, you know, the Jose Mourinho rumours have been going on for ages and ages and ages. It could be a case that he's managing in the Europa League again. It looks unlikely that City are going to get in, that United are going to get in the Champions League at this rate.
Well, absolutely. I think this game this weekend is a must win. I mean, arguably every Manchester derby is a must win, but on the back of Thursday's result, losing to Liverpool, I don't think Van Gaal can afford a costly defeat against Manchester City. He's already said we need to win it. He's come out and said we absolutely need to win it. For me, what I haven't seen from Van Gaal is a sense of adventure. I think they play in a very one-dimensional way. Yesterday was a great example. At half-time, Manchester United knew what they needed to do in the second half. They needed to score 3 goals, which can be done. As Liverpool showed in 2005 in Istanbul, maybe he could have played that DVD at halftime, the highlights of that to inspire his team. But unfortunately, they continued playing this rather ponderous style of football. They ramped it up a little. His substitutions were a little bit odd, and I think Manchester United fans were you know, this generation of Manchester United fans were raised on this gung ho football from Sir Alex Ferguson. And they're not seeing that from Van Gaal, so it's not a good fit at all.
Yeah, I mean, Van Gaal said he wasn't angry with his players yesterday after losing against Liverpool in quite meek fashion. I mean, that can't be a good sign. I mean, you know, if Klopp had been saying that, if the tables were turned, he'd be saying he'd be very disappointed with the performance and potentially angry with his players. You know, that doesn't smell of a manager who's really aiming as high as Man United can go, does it?
I think with Van Gaal, I think he knows what's going wrong, but I don't think he knows how to fix it, because in his head his principles are still 100% sound, and to some extent they are. I mean, I think the reason why United have lacked adventure and they only know how to play one way is because Van Gaal still isn't happy that they've learned his first lesson on how to kind of play the Van Gaal way. And they've shown flashes. We've had those little runs of form where we've beaten like four teams on a run, like 2 goals, 3 goals, something like that. But it just seems like as soon as United are about to turn the corner, they go back to being ponderous and boring again.
Which is very similar to City, actually. They've had a couple of spurts of form, and everyone thinks, here they go. They're going to go on a run now. And it just doesn't seem to happen. I mean, from their point of view, you know, the season kind of focuses on getting that Champions League qualification, which is absolutely essential. But it doesn't feel like a team that's auditioning for their new manager in Pep Guardiola, does it, Amar? It doesn't feel like they're really playing as hard as they can.
It's a very odd moment in this season for them, with Pellegrini confirming that he's leaving, with Guardiola confirming that he's going to be the next Manchester City manager. Should they be auditioning for Guardiola right now? I don't think they should. I think they should be focusing on the task at hand. And I think the fact that they've got to the quarterfinal of the Champions League for the first time,
yeah, huge.
Is a huge statement. However, they have to be very careful because they can't keep their eye off the top four. And I think there's not a lot in between West Ham, Manchester United, Arsenal, and Manchester City. Mm. So those are four teams that are effectively in the mix for third and fourth. So it's very, very important that they focus on their league form.
Yeah, Vincent Kompany injured again. They've looked poor without him all season. Otamendi, Demi Kalis and Mangala. Nobody's really taking charge of that defence, Greg. Who do you think is going to be the sort of players that, you know, will be looked at by Pep Guardiola as, you know, seen as leaders? It already looks like Yaya Toure might be on the way out, but who else might be? What other senior players might not survive the next season, especially if you see a poor result against United this weekend?
I think he will have probably been looking at the squad overall for the whole season. So I'm not sure whether anyone can read into the United game as, you know, who will make or break it under Pep. But one player who is also likely to not feature because of injury, I think, is Kevin De Bruyne. He's still not available. Mm. And obviously the effect of Kompany on the back line has been obvious for the last few years, but I mean, De Bruyne was signed this summer as a kind of alternative Silva to kind of wean City off this individualism they've kind of come to rely on. But he's kind of almost stepped into Silva's boots in a way. Like, they look twice a team when he plays. And I know when he got injured, loads of City fans were like, well, you know, there goes like our killer weapon this season, because he's been incredible. And also, you look at his career so far, he's got the kind of self-driven mentality to become a leader for City. Like, it was his decision to leave Chelsea to go to Wolfsburg and better himself. It's his decision to go to City and go, well, I've proven I'm a big enough player, let's go and do it. And he did. Like, he was fantastic when he was fit. So I think in De Bruyne, Pep's got exactly the kind of player with the right kind of attributes to play his football and also the right kind of mindset to really lead City into a more sustainable future, maybe.
Yeah, a real big miss for them, and such an innocuous injury as well. It didn't look like anything at the time, which never a good sign. Let's look lower down the table. We've also got the Tyne-Wear Derby this weekend, Newcastle-Sunderland. Which takes a different dimension with the sensational hire of Rafael Benitez at Newcastle, which has really given the club a lift.
The Spanish Big Sam, you could say.
The Spanish Big Sam, yeah, in many ways.
That is just doing a huge disservice to Rafa Benitez, isn't it?
You know, I think Big Sam probably sees himself at that level, though, knowing...
We could have managed Inter, Real Madrid. Rafa has.
Yeah.
You know, Aladici didn't quite make it, but Rafa Benitez has.
If you look at Sam Allardyce's Wikipedia page, someone's edited it, so his name is Sam Samuel Big Sam Allardyce, which I always think is quite funny to get all of those three in. What did Benitez change during his first game in Leicester? I mean, they looked a lot better as a club. You know, they looked a lot more solid defensively. What do you think he sort of instilled from day one? What's the sort of vibe that he's going to bring to that club?
Well, it sounds quite basic, but I think he just actually coached them some defensive formations and got them organised.
Are you suggesting that Steve McLaren is not a good defensive organisational coach?
I'm suggesting that Steve McLaren, he's not a friend of his players, but he's a bit more of a kind of, he's a lesser Brendan Rodgers to some extent. He's all into his neuro-linguistic programming type stuff, and he's less
a lesser about, Brendan Rodgers.
A lesser Brendan Rodgers. Yeah, I'm going there.
It's the management speak, isn't it?
It's the kind of David Brentism
and the matey sort of style. Yeah. I remember when he was England manager, and he had the nicknames for. He had the nicknames for all the players. He would be like Stevie, Frankie. And
That's the first thing Capello dropped, wasn't it? When he got in,
He's like, oh, Bembo to Chancellor Mbembo or something like that. You know, like, that's what he's doing on the training ground rather than actually coaching them. Yeah. Whereas I think Rafa's come in, and is it again? Sorry to go back to Dortmund comparisons, but when Klopp came into Liverpool this season, people going, oh, well, the manager can't have that much of an effect in the short amount of time he's been there. But he did. Like, he changed the mentality. Liverpool looked a completely different side in the same way. I mean, they got beat by Leicester, but I think Newcastle did look better. They looked a little bit more certain about what they're actually meant to do when they don't have the ball, which is a big difference for a team that have looked so kind of beatable.
Basically. I think there's quality in that squad. They have spent money. They've got players like Wijnaldum. They went for Shelvey, who's, you know, on paper a player who can boss possession, who's got good quality on the ball. You'd expect Rafa to get the best out of him. Mm-hmm. You know, technically very good players like Vernon and Nito, who haven't quite fulfilled their potential. Mm. Cech Tayote is another player. I mean, when I think of Rafa Benitez teams, you always think of the two midfielders that he likes sitting back. Mm. And, you know, one tends to be competitive and the other tends to be very good with the ball, very good with distribution. And there's players in that squad who can fulfil those roles, like Tiote, like Colback, like Shelvey.
And Anita's actually a very good footballer as well.
He can play in any position. I mean, he's coached in the Ajax way, where he can play in any position. So there's quality there. And Wijnaldum has been, at times, excellent this season. He's been probably the best off a fairly bad bunch this season. So I think there's players to work with. And Rafa, as Greg says, at the very least, will get them organised in a way that they weren't before.
Organised and motivated, and especially when you look at players like Moussa Sissoko, who's a French regular, you know, essentially. He might be a little bit worried about losing his place, given the, you know, we saw the France squad announced yesterday. We'll go on to that in the international squads in a minute, but, you know, the amount of talent in that squad is amazing. So Moussa Sissoko is clearly highly rated across the border. Benitez has won 64% of his encounters versus Allardyce in the Premier League. Obviously, he had slightly more talent than he does at Newcastle right now.
I don't know, Ayoze Perez, mate. He can make anything happen.
True. He can make anything happen anytime. Same for Mitrovic. But what can Benitez learn specifically from what Allardyce has done? Allardyce is a specialist in the sort of situations that Benitez finds himself in. What could Benitez look at Sam Allardyce and think, okay, I'm going to do what Allardyce did? What are the sort of hallmarks of the Allardyce sort of escape, as it were?
I think specifically for the Tynemouth derby, I think you should look at how Big Sam just kind of has given into the chaos, basically, in the last few fixtures. And just kind of, it's just rolling the dice. That's how Sunderland have been.
What do you mean, giving into the chaos?
As in, I wouldn't say that the way Big Sam set up Sunderland in the last few derbies has been a particularly Big Sam kind of way. If anything, he's been a bit adventurous in a way. He's just kind of thrown players at it, kind of, like I say, rolled the dice a bit. Defoe's been the guy who's made the difference for them. It's not exactly been like a result-free process. I think the Tannoy derby is still one of the most enjoyable and amazing matches in English football, and I think Big Sam's kind of realised it's a fixture, kind of even bigger than their relegation scrap, so he's just kind of gone for it. And it's a kind of a momentum-building thing that's actually saved Sunderland over the last, what, 3 or 4 years? And I think it's such a different special match that Benitez might have to also throw caution to the wind a bit and just go a bit gung-ho.
Yeah, fair enough. One more derby to cover. We're going to cover Chelsea-West Ham. Obviously, a London derby, West versus East, and a sort of a role reversal there at the moment. Strange times for Chelsea, like a lot of the big clubs in the UK right now. But West Ham, I mean, you know, everything looks fantastic for them. Quick question for you. Would Slaven Bilic have actually been a really good choice for Chelsea manager? He looks like someone who'd been tailor-made for them.
Well, he's surpassed my expectations for him this season. I think everyone knew, particularly when he was coming up as a national manager for Croatia, that he's got some real managerial talent, famously embarrassed England on a couple of occasions. And subsequently, you know, he's coached at various places, including Besiktas last season. And I was out in Turkey last year and met a couple of friends there who work in football. And they were telling me that he was very, very popular with the fans. Besiktas, a real people's club, a bit like West Ham, with that real community spirit. But against the big teams, he always struggled, which is interesting because he's done really well against the bigger teams, the so-called big six sides, if you like, in the Premier League this season. He's pulled out great results, and he's got West Ham playing a brand of football that's more agreeable with the fans than what they had under Sam Allardyce. And I think by the time Sam Allardyce left the club last season, West Ham fans were quite indifferent about him and his approach and how bullish he was about his tactics. And I think Bilic has restored this sense of adventure. However, key to it is Dimitri Payet.
Absolutely. The man of the moment, Greg. I mean, West Ham are probably a few years ahead of where Gold and Sullivan expected them to be. You know, they're moving to the Olympic Park, but they've really found a gem, a genuine top-class, nay, world-class player in Dimitri Payet, who actually got a call-up to the France squad yesterday. I mean, how important is he to West Ham? Can they actually tick without him?
I think they can just about get by, but I don't think they're the side that have got to where they are in the Premier League this season and beaten the big guys without a player like Payet. I think they're a club that have made the most of the TV deal. Back in the day, like, the top four, the top six had all the money in English football and everybody else had to kind of get along with the scraps. Whereas West Ham have shown if you're a club with the right kind of insight into who to buy, where to go for a good bargain, you can get someone like Payet, who made more chances in the Europe's top five seasons than anybody else last season, including Messi and Ronaldo. But because of his age, and you know, he's a bit of a tubby lad, isn't he? So maybe some of the bigger clubs are looking at him going, he doesn't quite fit the profile of the perfect signing we want to throw some money at. Whereas West Ham, they've got the money now, they've got the money in the bank, they can just go and throw it on a player. And I mean, look at Mahrez as well at Leicester. These are the kind of signings that are maybe for a few years at least, we're going to give the lesser clubs, I hate to say that because West Ham are a big team, a leg up against the established kind of giants.
It's definitely the season of the scouting in terms of, you know, hidden gems. I mean, you look at Vardy, Drinkwater, you know, Mahrez, all those sort of players. Antonio Conte is, you know, probably going to come in next season for Chelsea. They've got nothing left to play for, Chelsea, effectively. You know, the Europa League looks very, very unlikely. You know, they need to rebuild the team. There's problems all over the pitch. Even Thibaut Courtois, their hallmark goalkeeper, hasn't looked that convincing this season since coming back from injury. Mm. What's Conte going to be looking for from Chelsea for the rest of the season? I mean, what can they do to sort of impress this very disciplinarian manager when he comes in?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Conte is a disciplinarian. He's known for being very autocratic, demanding a really high work rate from his players. And I think he'll be expecting to see exactly that. Chelsea players working hard off the ball. He'll be looking at transitions in particular, which was ironically a big thing under Mourinho. But the funny thing is, you know, I think a lot of these Chelsea players I expect a few of them to switch off in the next few weeks. Mm. Diego Costa, for me, looks like a man who'd like to be anywhere else but in the Premier League. I can see him going back to Spain. Eden Hazard certainly looks like wants to fulfil his potential and his destiny and win the Ballon d'Or by going somewhere else.
Yeah.
I can see a club like Real Madrid, who've been very vocal about their interest in him, Zidane has certainly, coming in for him this summer, despite him having such a poor season. I think Willian has been a fantastic signing, and he's been brilliant this season. And I think he is certainly a player that Conte can build that team around. I can see him becoming more integral to that Chelsea side next season under Conte.
Interesting. Okay, let's go for a brief note on the England squad, which was announced yesterday. Go through the headlines. Obviously, everyone's talking about the man of the moment, Danny Drinkwater. Completed the most passes at Leicester this season, and you know he's just a guy who's sort of been a glue for that midfield alongside the incredible energy of N'Golo Kanté. Is it a deserved call up? I mean, should he actually get some game time? Is he the best holding midfielder we've got in the UK? What's your honest evaluation of Danny Drinkwater, Greg?
I don't think he's the best player of his type England has, but so often people demand that the England squad is picked on form. And you know, you can't argue that this isn't a selection made on form.
Yeah.
So if Roy Hodgson goes and picks on reputation, he's going to get criticism. When he goes and picks Danny Drinkwater because he's the man in form, he's probably going to get criticised because he's maybe not of the actual calibre people expect of an England player. But I think he's earned his chance. I hope players like him and Vardy offer something a bit different to what might be at times look at quite a complacent group of players in England, in England's setup. They're obviously going to be bringing a different approach, different experiences. Maybe a bit of a closer understanding of the fans, because Leicester aren't a club that are maybe they don't cosset their players as much as the other bigger teams do. So maybe they'll bring a different insight into the England squad.
Yeah, we were. I mean, midfield options for England are, you know, relatively poor at the moment. Eric Dier is being touted as probably the leading candidate for that holding midfield role. He's very inexperienced. Why has nobody been looking at Mark Noble, Amar? I mean, he's captain the under-18s, the under-21s. He's been around for, you know, a very long time. He's doing a great job in that West Ham midfield. He's also happens to be eligible for the Republic of Ireland. So and he's still waiting for his call-up. Why hasn't he been given a shot?
I think you'll have to ask Roy Hodgson that. clearly doesn't fancy him. Mark Noble, we were looking at the data yesterday. His pass completion is up there compared to others in midfield. His key passes is very high. He gets forward regularly and he gets involved in attacks regularly. So he's, you know, absolutely vital to West Ham. Whether he would have that sort of influence in a team like England, though, I'm not sure, you know. Mm. But he, for a so-called defensive midfielder, I'd say he's more box-to-box than Eric Dier. And I think if you've got Drinkwater, I think it's all about giving him a chance and seeing what he can do against, well, it's Germany and the Netherlands. So, they're not shabby sides, are they?
Yeah.
So, it's sink or swim for him.
Fair enough.
He needs to
show the thirst for success.
Here we go. I think Dan Drinkwater has taken Noble's kind of spot as the kind of underdog midfielder. So,
The narrative is there.
Exactly.
You spoke about form, Greg. One thing probably mentioned, Welbeck and Sturridge back in the fold for England, which makes sense. Welbeck's looked really good for Arsenal, although his finishing maybe a little bit questionable. Sturridge looks electric. He's come back from injury and he looks like someone who can do pretty much anything with the ball. Liverpool's attack not clicking quite 100% yet, but he looks like he's...
Fortunately, Firmino is not English, though, so that kind of conflict isn't going to be there for Roy Hodgson.
One interesting continuing call-up is Theo Walcott.
He's scored just
two goals and he's not got a single assist in his last 15 Premier League games. Yeah. £140,000 a week for Arsenal, and to be honest with you, a lot of Arsenal fans are sort of wondering why he's still at the club. He doesn't seem to have kicked on from that little patch of form from the end of last year and early this year. Why is he in the England squad?
I don't know, because as we said, Martin Noble's not in there partly because Danny Drinkwater's in there. If we've got Jamie Vardy, why do we need Theo Walcott?
Yeah.
They offer, you know, Theo Walcott is meant to be this kind of pacey guy who's got amazing off-the-ball movement. That's Vardy, and Vardy does more defensively.
Yeah.
So, I don't know why he's there.
Okay, that's fair enough. We were talking about Theo Walcott. Let's have a quick word about Everton Arsenal just to finish off the pod, which is obviously, you know, quite a big game between two big teams. Both teams massively underperforming, very frustrating teams for both sets of fans. I mean, Arsenal fans are obviously, you know, they're a step away from suicide at the moment. They're really not happy with what's going on. They were a little bit better against Barcelona in midweek, but they didn't win. The major positive was Mohamed Elneny having an actual midfielder in midfield for Arsenal, doing a very good job. 92% pass accuracy. He took three shots at goal, made three interceptions, won two tackles, scored a goal. He did a great job against a Barca midfield. What do you think? How do you think they can use him in the rest of the season, Amar? Can they actually build on that with Elneny in midfield?
Yeah, I think he's in the position where he can become intrinsic to Arsenal towards the end of the season. I think the title is gone now for Arsenal. Nevertheless, they're in a race for the top four spaces, and I think he can fulfil that central midfield position better than Ramsey. I think Ramsey struggled in fulfilling that Cazorla role while Cazorla's injured. So I think Elneny showed in the Camp Nou with a fantastic goal as well, with a very good performance, that he can hold his own against the best team in the world. I just listened to the Arsene Wenger press conference this morning, and he was asked, how are you going to deal with Lukaku? And he said, listen, we played against Suarez, Neymar and Messi on Wednesday night. And I was thinking, yeah, but they all scored.
it's a very good point. I mean, you know, nobody's debating how good Messi, Suarez and Neymar are, but, you know, claiming that because you played against them means you can handle Lukaku isn't necessarily, you know, a valid argument. Greg, Arsene Wenger's press conference seemed to be getting more and more tetchy, bit more and more defensive. You know, they've got four wins in 15. They've only scored 20 goals. They've conceded 20. You know, it's a very, very poor run of form, even for an Arsenal collapse. You know, where does sort of Arsenal kind of go from here? I mean, what's the goal for the rest of the season? Obviously, it sounds like top four, but you know, what's the prognosis?
Same old. I think there was they were there, even when they were leading the league earlier this season. At that point in the season, they still had generally the same amount of points they've had over the last three seasons or something. So it was more the fact they were only top of the league because everybody else was underperforming. So Wenger is still just keeping the same kind of like fourth place level that he has done for many, many years. And I really like Arsene Wenger. I do think he gets way too much stick. I wrote that piece last year, woe betide Arsenal fans for wanting to be gone because look at what happened at Man United. And I do think there is some truth in that. But at the same time, the issues, if you say, individual errors are costing us games, well, you know, there is a certain culture also that seems to not be as ruthless as you need to be to finish off those chances and make sure those mistakes don't happen. You say leaders on the field, you can call whatever you want, but Wenger's been there so long. The culture is Wenger. He created the culture. He's appointed most of the coaches. He signed most of the players. So if you're going to start picking at the kind of details, the details are Wenger's. Like, everything, the totality of Arsenal is Arsene Wenger. So if you've got a complaint with that, ultimately, if the pattern keeps repeating, he's got to go, or he's got to kind of go upstairs and be director of football for somebody else. He can stay involved maybe, because obviously he's been done so much for the club, but I mean, yeah. The only way you're going to break this cycle is by getting somebody else in with a bit more maybe of a decisive, incisive personality to kind of kick things on, basically.
A lot of the criticisms you just pointed at, Arsene, could also be made at Roberto Martinez. Everton fans extremely frustrated with Martinez, who seems to have he's built a very talented squad, and they have a lot of talent. Especially they have, you know, the jewel in the crown is Romelu Lukaku. But Everton seem to lack a bit of a ruthless streak sometimes, and Lukaku's body language can be a little bit confusing. But he is going to be the main threat for Everton this weekend. I mean, how do Arsenal handle him? I mean, it's easy for Wenger to dismiss, but how do Arsenal handle Romelu Lukaku?
They need to mark him. I would suggest that's a good place to start. It's funny because Arsene Wenger's rigid approach and unwavering belief in his own philosophy means that he rarely ever sends a team out to counter against the threats of the opposition. Mm. He strongly believes that Arsenal should play on the front foot, play their passing game, and they will overcome anyone, you know, and I think that is part of the reason why Arsenal fans have had enough, because there doesn't ever seem to be a plan B, plan C. I mean, he's had a couple of games where he's been more pragmatic, like the win against Bayern Munich. That was very good, and Arsenal had much less possession. Against a team like Everton, you've got two coaches who like to play this adventurous brand of football, but when it comes to shutting up shop, and closing the back door, then neither are that good. And I think the frustration around them both, you know, even though they are very different stages in their managerial career, there's certainly a parallel in the frustration that fans have around both men.
Just before we wrap up for the day, we've just heard that Liverpool have drawn Dortmund in the Europa League, which is obviously a bit of a sensational tie. Mm. Very quick sort of poll opinions. Amar, obviously, you know, you've been following Liverpool for a very long time. What will this mean for Klopp? It's going to be quite emotional.
Emotional is the first word that comes to mind, yeah. Actually. He is Mr. Emotional. He believes in emotional football. That's what he said when he came to Liverpool, and he wears his heart on his sleeve, and the fans adore him at Dortmund. It's a huge game. I think that Dortmund squad is a Champions League caliber squad. I mean, it's just got quality all over it. Royce, Aubameyang, Kagawa, Hummels. It's just top quality squad, and is man for man ahead of Liverpool's squad. However, you know, football is an emotional game, and I expect it to be a really, you know, feisty encounter between you know, Liverpool, who are learning this sort of pressing style and developing this pressing style, and Tuchel's Dortmund, who are almost moving away a little bit from Klopp's style of football into a slightly different sort of style of football. And it'd be a fascinating encounter, but you have to make Dortmund favourites.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Hummels before. He's been absolutely incredible this season and was key in, you know, essentially dismantling Spurs. Greg, do you think Dortmund are the favourites for this one? I mean, we saw what they did against admittedly a weakened Spurs side, but they look good.
Yeah, I think they definitely are. And I think Tuchel, I think he kind of knows Klopp's methods both as an opponent and as a successor at Dortmund. So Amar just talked about how he's moved Dortmund on a bit, and how he did that is kind of recognising the weaknesses that had grown into Klopp's system. So Klopp was sending a few too many players forward. There was a lack of balance deep in midfield, so he signed Weigl. Played Weigl as the kind of anchor man in between defence and midfield.
Outstanding signing.
Yeah, I mean, no one saw it coming as well. The guy was playing second division football last year. He was seen as a signing for the future, but he's completely changed how Dortmund play, and he's become an integral player. And he allows Gundogan and Kagawa and those guys to kind of become more effective. They don't have to attack in as many numbers, but they're a bit more clinical now, because they're just more balanced. And in football, balance is always what you're trying to achieve with your tactics. So I think Tuchel knows what happens when kind of Klopp's tactics go too far, so he might be able to take Liverpool apart. Yeah,
Fantastic. Well, gentlemen, that's all we've got time for. Thanks very much for joining us on the Squawker Talker. And we look very much forward to all those Premier League games. So it's goodbye from Amar Singh.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from Greg Johnson.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from me. Thanks very much for joining us. See you next week.